Welcome to Parents' Perspective. It was nearly supper time, and 5-year-old Bobby was agitated. He kept running up and down the stairs, throwing his action figures over the second floor railing and chasing the dog unendingly around and around the house. His mom was nearly driven to distraction by all the commotion. "What is going on?" she finally asked, figuring that he must be excited about his teenage cousin's visit. "Can't you sit and play quietly until Billy and Harry arrive? They'll be here any minute now." At that, Bobby was off and running, trying to catch the dog and yelling, "Tickle, tickle, turn into a pickle!" This was altogether too much for his mom. She grabbed him by the arm and sat him down next to her on the bottom step. "The dog doesn't like to be tickled," she said. "What is the matter?"
"I don't like to be tickled. I hate to be tickled," he announced,
tears beginning to well in his eyes. He began to squirm.
"Tell Billy and Harry no touching anywhere. Tell them to leave me alone."
Just then the doorbell rang, and Bobby tore up the stairs and into his room, slamming the door behind him. From a parent's perspective, how can we help our children to physically protect themselves? I'm Sandy Burt. Today, Linda Perlis cannot be with us. Our guest today can help us with the advice and encouragement we need to help our children deal with these difficult issues. Christine Boucher is the Executive Director of the Child Assault Prevention Project at the Metropolitan Center for Assault Prevention in Wheaton, Maryland. She is the mother of a 6-year-old daughter and a 15-week-old son. Thanks for being with us, Christine.
Thanks, Sandy. I'm happy to be here.
In the Child Assault Prevention Project, you mentioned 3 kinds of unsafe situations children might face. Would you explain those for us?
Oh, I'd be happy to. The first issue that we deal with is child-on-child violence, or bullying, is the term that's often used. The second kind is what we refer to as stranger danger, and that is child abduction by someone the child does not know. And the third is what we refer to as safe and unsafe touches by someone the child knows.
What's the most important knowledge or capacity a child can have to attempt to handle these kinds of stressful encounters?
Well, through our program, we try to empower children. And we do that by, first of all, teaching them that they need to trust their feelings. If something doesn't feel right, if there's something creepy about it, we tell them to really pay attention to that and go with it. So a lot of it is, what are you feeling? How does this action make you feel?
It's interesting because I heard something not long ago that women, particularly in situations where they may be vulnerable, you know, dark parking lots or something like that, have also been told to sort of go with their feelings. So it's, I guess, something that all adults really need to pay more attention to. We're used to sweeping all that stuff under the rug.
And not only that, but we also teach children to be polite and to be agreeable and to please other people, especially adults, to be respectful, to be obedient. And so that's where the feelings are so important, because if the child is intellectually processing what's happening and saying, well, I'm supposed to be polite, I'm supposed to be agreeable, then that could lead the child to do something that we would discourage them from doing. Whereas if the feeling that they're having is negative, then we say, well, you have to pay attention to that. That should take precedence over what you're thinking.
And where I guess it gets sticky is in situations where you would think that everything would be quite safe with a trusted adult of some kind. In a situation, of course, we've been hearing so much about the clergy, but in so many situations where a child is really with a trusted adult, and he or she is feeling really uncomfortable.
Recently, a 7-year-old boy came up to one of the facilitators when we were doing our workshop, and he said, "I'll never forget the day that you guys were here last year. That was the day that changed my life, because I went home and had our babysitter fired because he was touching me in ways that I didn't like." So we know this program's working.
Wow.
And in addition to their having to pay attention to their feelings, we also make sure that they understand that they have rights, that children have rights, and they have the right to say no. They have the right to leave a situation that makes them feel uncomfortable. They can say stop. So those are the things we try to impress upon them. We also try to encourage them to spend time with their friends, not just as playmates, but sort of as supporters. You know, the expression that their safety in numbers is really true. So being alone with someone is obviously more dangerous than if you're with a group of friends. And you just mentioned the trusted adults. This is another really important point in our program, because children need to know that there are adults they can go to who can be trusted. If a child is being assaulted by an adult, that child could have lots of feelings of mistrust towards adults. And rather than feeling that they can open up to adults, they'll see them as being the enemy. And added to that is the problem of adults, including parents, who don't believe a child when the child talks about they're being assaulted. And that happens very often.
Well, this, I think, we need to explore, because I can hear all the parents out there thinking, well, how do we know what to believe? And sometimes with kids, kids have pretty vivid imaginations and so on. Are there certain cues that we should look for if a child is telling us something that seems pretty amazing?
First of all, it's really important to have a relationship with your child that encourages them to be open and honest. And that's not something that just happens in one instance. So with parents, we talk about being able to engage their children in discussion about sensitive issues, about everything, and to not judge them and to not challenge them or threaten them or not believe them. Because if the child feels that he's in an environment where he can be open and honest, he's more likely to do that. We also don't believe that children, and I'm going to say, you know, the majority of the time, children don't lie to get themselves into trouble. They lie to get themselves out of trouble. So by bringing up an issue like this or an instance, it's very unlikely that the child is making it up. There have been instances where children have told their parents and the parents just didn't want to believe it because the perpetrator was a known entity. So the parent just said, no, that didn't happen. And it caused trouble by talking about it. So the child doesn't want to speak about it. That's exactly the wrong thing to do. And it's all really connected. If we don't talk about things and we maintain sort of a secrecy about issues, then children get the message that secrecy is okay. But if we're open about things and we talk about them, then they know that their parents are those trusted adults that they can go to.
Now, speaking of that, when you said before that children have the right to say no, they have the right to leave a situation, how can parents help them to know how they can safely leave a situation? We're now all so dependent on transportation other than feet. Should parents have some kind of a fail-safe structure in place with a child? If you have to leave someplace in an emergency basis, you can call me at this number and I'll come get you, or something like that.
One of the things about cell phones that's so good is that now it's very easy to contact anybody at any time, which is probably the best thing about them. But parents have to be involved in their kids' lives. And one of the things we recommend, just one of the little pointers that we give, is, you know your child's route. Know where your child walks. Be familiar with that so that you can say to your child, this is not a really good way to go. Or if you have to go this way, this is a place that you really need to be careful. But we have to be more involved with them. Leaving it to television or the schools is really not responsible. If you really want to protect your children, you really have to take an interest and play an active role in their safety.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on child assault prevention.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Christine Boucher about child assault prevention. You pay particular attention to problem solving. How do we teach our children to do this effectively?
We use a model that's pretty traditional, where we recommend that parents and children together identify a problem, and then they brainstorm solutions to the problem, and then evaluate each problem, and then kind of come up with what they agree is a good plan of action.
Can you give us an example?
For example, you're in the park, and you are playing ball with your friends, and the ball gets thrown far away from where everybody is, and you go after it, and an adult comes over to you and tells you that he has a problem and he needs help, and could you please come with him over to his car? And he tells you that your mother's in the hospital. I came to take you right away so you can go see her. Well, you know, our immediate instinct is to say, of course I want to be with my mother. A child is going to feel the same way as an adult. But what we then say is, okay, what's the problem here? So it's identify the problem. And hopefully the child is going to say, well, somebody I don't know wants me to do something. But he said that my mother is sick. So is the problem that my mother's sick? So it's really pinpointing what the issue is. And then we, you know, and as the parent, we try to say, well, wait a minute, how do you know that that's true? So you help the child to really see that the problem here is his need to make a decision about whether to go with this person or not. And then we brainstorm solutions. Well, what could you do? Well, I could go with him. I could run away. I could yell. I can call somebody over. I mean, you just ask the child to come up with different things to do, and then you evaluate each one of those. Well, if you go with him, then what could happen? Well, maybe he would take me to the hospital. But what if I'm not in the hospital? What if that was just a lie? And then the child can, you know, hopefully you're leading the child to come up with all of the different scenarios of what could possibly occur.
Now, I'm thinking that, you know, all of the parents listening might say to themselves, well, wait a minute, if I go through this scenario with my child, I'm going to have a scared-to-death child. How do you deal with that?
Often people think that the topic is scary to children, but we have found that not to be the case at all. The way that we present the program in schools is very interactive and non-threatening. We don't use words like assault and abuse. We use age-appropriate, child-friendly language. It doesn't really scare them. It opens up a dialogue for them. Not talking about it doesn't make it go away. So if we don't want to talk about it, honestly, it's more the baggage that adults have than it is children. Because when you start talking to kids about things, the earlier you do it, the more open they are to talk about them as they get older. You know, if you wait until they're on the verge of puberty, then it's going to be much harder. But if you've been talking about it all along, it just becomes part of your discussion with them.
If you wait till they're on the verge of puberty, they only want the car keys, and then they're really gone. So,
right.
In your workshops, you mentioned specific skills that children can employ, for example, when they're approached by strangers. Would you review some of those for us?
We teach some very elementary self-defense skills, because what we say to children is your objective is to get away. Your number one objective is to get away. So we teach them things. We have something called the pinky pull. We just show them other ways to sort of physically block a person. We also have what we call the safety yell. And we teach them to yell. We teach them to it's a deep guttural yell that comes from their diaphragm. We tell them, you know, you can say no, you can say stop, you can say help, you can just yell. You don't even have to use a word.
Now, why is the safety yell better than the regular yell that we hear all the time from kids?
For exactly that reason, that it's different, that it brings attention to the child. And we tell them it's like calling 911. You want to sound like there's an emergency.
Someone once said that when you have those kinds of situations, that you're not supposed to yell help because people have heard that before or something. You're supposed to yell fire. Is that true?
I think that in that instance, whatever you can do, I think it's more the sound and the tone than it is the actual word that you're using. The idea is to get attention to yourself. It's to call attention to yourself, is to get people to look and to see what's happening. And to come to your aid. Also, if it is done in the right way, it creates like this element of surprise, and the abductor for even a temporary time can be kind of
off balance a little
bit. And they say that within the first 30 seconds, that's the child's best opportunity for getting away. So that's one of the things we teach. We also tell them, don't ever go to a secondary place. Don't get in a car. Don't go somewhere else. Try to stay where you are and then leave from that place. Because getting away, if you're somewhere else, is going to be much harder.
What about if this child is small enough, and kids are sometimes up to age 10, that they could be picked up? I always used to worry about that with my kids. Somebody could just scoop them up.
And that's one of the things, one of the kind of the self-defense skills that we teach. When the program is done, there's a demonstration of things that you can do. And kids love it. You know, they get really excited about it. And I've seen them all cheering and saying, yeah, you know, and they want to do it. So kids are much more attuned to these kinds of things than we think they are. I mean, they know things like this have happened to kids.
It's very frightening for parents, but I assume it must be empowering for kids on a certain level.
Well, it is. And one of the things that we tell them to do is to be assertive, that it's really a good thing to yell, to call attention to yourself, to stand up for your rights, to be aggressive in these situations, because perpetrators are looking for the meek, passive child. That's what they want. And if you surprise that perpetrator with some sort of wild response, you know, your chances of getting away will be better.
That's interesting. As parents, we feel so acutely how vulnerable a child can be. With that in mind, how can we be assured that a child can put these principles into action if necessary?
You can never really be assured 100%, but we can do a lot of things as parents to reinforce all of the messages that the CAP program teaches.
CAP means Child Assault Prevention.
You can watch television with your child, read to your child, go to the movies. Things that you do together, things that you see, you can relate to these other issues.
For example?
You can, if you watch a program, sometimes, for example, Sesame Street, they deal with different issues. And if you're watching it with your child and they bring up an issue about stranger danger or one of these other types of assault, you can start bringing in all of these different principles that we're talking about and talk to your child about it, or ask, how does that relate to what we talk about at home?
Of course, the problem is when the child is watching something like cartoons and everybody's a superhero or a roadrunner gets away all the time and all this kind of stuff. How do you bring that back to reality?
Well, that's another perfect example of how you can connect with your child in different ways. I mean, when your kids are watching a program like Sesame Street or Arthur or any of those shows where they're trying to impart lessons, that's simple. But it's the other things that are, you know, the things that are more complex that you have to make the connection with and ask them about it. Say, well, what happened right there? Was that a good thing that happened? What Roadrunner did to Wile E. Coyote, was that a good thing to do? What would you do in a situation like this? I mean, there are different ways that you can bring these principles out into the open to discuss them.
We'll take a short break and be right back to finish our discussion about child assault prevention. For an audio cassette copy of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Christine Boucher about child assault prevention. As a caring community, which you're all trying to build, of course, how can we all be of help in this kind of situation?
Our program takes a three-pronged approach to child assault prevention. In addition to doing workshops in the classroom, we also do a presentation to school personnel and to parents. One of the problems we have is getting parents to attend. We tell parents what the program is about, the things their kids are going to be hearing about and learning about. We also have a handbook that we give to parents so that they can, at home, reinforce all of these messages. So it's really important for parents to take an active part in their children's education and their lives. So attending things like this is important. Also, the community has to start a dialogue about these issues. This is an issue nobody wants to talk about. And I can tell you from reports that we get, it can be extremely disturbing to hear some of the things that are going on and to hear children talking about them. It is heartbreaking. But not talking about it isn't helping at all. So adults have to be more willing to talk about these things and to leave their baggage behind. It's prevention is important because it's not a response to something that's happened already. It's teaching children the skills that they need so that it does not happen. And people have to be much more committed to prevention just as an issue itself and not having to respond when something tragic happens. When there's a crisis, that's when people respond.
And that's what we're hearing all over the news these days, unfortunately. And one famous incident that I'm thinking of right now is a situation where two children were involved and one was a witness and told not to tell anybody. And so that child didn't tell anybody for 2 hours. Now, how can we insulate kids against that kind of behavior?
Well, we tell children that keeping secrets is not a good thing. And that's something that we have to reinforce as parents. You know, if you're secretive in your family, children get that message. And so it's okay to keep secrets. But if we tell them, you know, it isn't good. If somebody tells you not to tell something, that should automatically make you think, well, why is he telling me that? Why should I keep this a secret? So we encourage them not to keep secrets, which is totally different from, you know, there's a surprise birthday party. That's not what we're talking about. Again, it's trust your feelings. How does this make you feel? And if the person's telling you not to tell anybody, question why.
So this business of being sure that you're empowered not to keep a secret is a pretty heavy thing for a child, isn't it?
Yeah, and one of the ways as a parent we can help our children is by listening and believing them and not blaming them. That's a big problem here, that children feel guilty or ashamed because of what's happened, that in some way it was their fault. And it's really important for parents to support children and not blame them for what's happened. This is not a child's problem. This is an adult's problem. The perpetrator is the one with the issues, not the child.
That's an important thing for us to keep in focus, because we know with divorced children blame themselves. But this stuff, we're not quite as clear on.
And so that's one of the reasons that they're reluctant to speak about it. And, you know, the statistic is that 1 in 4 girls is sexually assaulted. And for boys, the number is 1 in either 5 or 7.
That's really high.
But they believe it's really higher, except that boys are more reluctant to talk about it.
Because they feel that somehow they're to blame.
That's right.
Wow. All right. That's important for us all to keep in mind as parents, not to blame the victim.
And just remember, too, that the statistic for pedophiles is that a pedophile will molest 350 children before he's caught. And it usually goes on for about 7.5 years. And on average, it starts when a child is 6.
Wow. That's heavy information for parents to know. At this point, I think we need to leave our parents and all the community members with some resources that we feel like we can use to try to make things a little bit better for our children. Are there places, websites, or organizations that you'd like to mention that would be helpful, specifically your own, I would think?
MCAP, which stands for Metropolitan Center for Assault Prevention, has a website, and it's metrocap.org. And on our website, we have a lot of the materials that we give to parents in our parent workshops. There are also resources there for teachers and for kids.
Can you repeat the website again? Because I know people are grabbing pencils and paper as we speak.
Okay. It's metrocap.org.
And that is the website for the
Metropolitan Center for Assault Prevention.
Okay.
So if you go to the website, you can download materials, a lot of the things we've talked about, a lot of the different skills that we teach, ways parents can help. We have different activities that parents can do with their kids and teachers as well. And then there's also a list of resources, recommended reading, phone numbers to call, laws.
Okay, so that's one-stop shopping, basically, from this website. Now, are the laws basically state by state? What kinds of laws are around?
The laws that are on our website are particular to the regions that we deliver programs in.
And what regions are those?
Washington, D.C. and Maryland.
And how would people who are living in other sections of the country be able to access what the laws are in their areas?
It's really easy to do that. There are many, many websites that will offer that to you. If you go to your local police website, that is where usually the most current legal information is. Where I live, the website for the police has, if you register, you can actually find the names of all of the registered pedophiles. It's listed right there for you. So you could know who has been...
Has a record. Now, is that something that's also nationwide? You can find that out state by state? I know that that's been an issue recently.
It's not in not every state, but...
So you have to find out from the police department whether your state has that registered or not.
Right. More, you know, every year there's another state that signs on to that. Right.
Okay. But this website that you gave is a place that parents can go for information, general information that we've been talking about. Suppose parents want to start a program like this in their area. Where would they find the information to do that?
For the CAP program, anybody can call us, and if we can't help you, we can definitely direct you to the appropriate source.
Do you have an 800 number?
We do have a phone number. It's not an 800 number, but people can still call it.
Okay.
It's 301-962-6180. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You want to repeat that just in case people are scrambling to get it?
301-962-6180.
Well, our special thanks to Christine Boucher for so many helpful suggestions today for our parents who are anxious but at least now have some ammunition to do something good about all our anxieties about child assault prevention. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Sandy.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 156. Tell us if you can what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids are both available at all major bookstores and on the web. To learn more about us and our book, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt, and Linda Perlis will be with us again on our next show. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.